funding for NJ Spotlight News provided by the members of the New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child, and RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, commuters sound off on a proposed New Jersey Transit fare hike.
Trips are canceled for mechanical issues, crew or driver availability, or other factors within or beyond NJ Transit's control.
As the agency looks for a financial lifeline to offset its billion-dollar budget shortfall. Plus, with co-defendant Jose Uribe pleading guilty in the Menendez's bribery case, what his cooperation with prosecutors means for the embattled senior senator moving forward.
The more people you can bring in from the inside of that conspiracy, to kind of talk with personal experience about it to the jury, the more effective it is.
Also, the fate of some community colleges hangs in the balance as Governor Murphy's new budget slashes $20 million of their funding.
Do they need to remove programs, reduce student services, lay off staff? These are all decisions that none of our colleges want to confront.
And financial freedom. On the heels of his gubernatorial bid, Mayor Raz Baraka and the First Lady of Newark launch a free financial education program aimed at supporting the women of Brick City.
Because as a woman, it's important to be on top of your finances, no matter where you are in the spectrum, whether you're in debt or whether you're doing positive.
NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening and thanks for joining us this Monday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. If you're a commuter with a gripe, today was the day to let your voice be heard. With the final two of four total public hearings wrapped up on New York City's proposed congestion pricing plan, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority has listened to hundreds of voices from both New Jersey and New York in support and opposition to the new toll, which is slated to start as early as June and charge drivers of passenger vehicles an extra $15. Trucks would pay as much as a $36 fee to enter Midtown Manhattan south of 60th Street. It's money the MTA says it needs to keep the system running, and a similar argument to the one being made by New Jersey Transit, which is also staring down a fiscal cliff, hoping to stave it off at least partially through a proposed 15% fare hike starting July 1st. Today kicked off the first two of 10 public hearings required by the agency. As senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan reports, commuters had more than just price increases to complain about.
It is 11 o'clock a.m., and we'll begin the public hearings.
NJ Transit kicked off the first of 10 public hearings on proposed fare hikes in a mostly empty conference room at the Cherry Hill Public Library, where just 10 speakers stepped up to the mic over 2 hours. A couple called out the agency for choosing a venue with scant public transit access instead of a transportation hub like the Walter Rand Center in Camden.
Especially this being the only fare hearing in Camden County, I just can't stress it enough how bad of a choice I think this is.
David Hamilton rides the River Line from Camden to Trenton. He says NJ Transit's refused rider requests to testify via Zoom like the MTA did for hearings on congestion pricing. And Hamilton noted Camden offers several more accessible hearing sites.
You know, there's Camden City Hall. That's one place to hold it. There's Rutgers campus in Camden. There's lots of places they could have it, but you know, they prioritize, you know, feeling safe about their cars instead of listening to the people that actually take transit to work every day. It seems like a really huge oversight.
An NJ Transit spokesman said Walter Rand had no room for a hearing and buses run within 3/4 of a mile of the library. The agenda asked for a comment on the proposed 15% fare hike this year and another 3% increase every year after that. It'd get NJ Transit through fiscal year 2025, but fares alone won't fill the estimated $767 million budget hole predicted for 2026. These South Jersey riders complained, why pay more for bad service?
Trips are canceled for mechanical issues, crew or driver availability, or other factors within or beyond NJ Transit's control. But their frequency, leave riders with the impression that NJ Transit just doesn't care.
This always seems to be a problem with those trains at all of the time, breaking down.
Another speaker talked about fare jumpers and violent fights on buses. Liz Zaramba pays $200 a month for a bus pass.
I'm paying, but at the same time, I don't always feel safe on there. I never see the plainclothes officers. I never see police in officer clothes, in uniform.
NJ Transit plans 8 more public hearings over the next 4 days, many of them at transit hubs and colleges. No doubt more people will show up for those events.
What we can't have is trying to balance the budget on the back of riders. And again, fully recognizing the fiscal cliff that we're looking at.
Advocate Deborah Coyle says she supports Governor Murphy's newly proposed corporate transit fee on major corporations to fix that problem. The New Jersey Alliance for Action called for stable funding.
It's critical for the future of New Jersey transit, our commutes, and our ability to get from here to there.
But many South Jersey businesses see little benefit in paying another tax with so little transit service available here. Meanwhile, NJ Transit still hasn't settled a contract dispute with its locomotive engineers union. That's now in federal mediation.
Do you anticipate there might be a strike?
I believe so, yes. I do. Eventually, yes.
But that's months down the road. NJ Transit scheduled to vote on the proposed fare hikes April 10th. In Cherry Hill, I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
In a surprise twist on Friday, a key co-defendant in the federal bribery case against U.S. Senator Bob Menendez changed his plea to guilty. North Jersey businessman Jose Uribe, who was indicted alongside the senior senator and his wife, two other businessmen, is the first to plead guilty to the corruption charges and the first to agree to cooperate with prosecutors. Uribe, a former insurance broker, told a federal judge on Friday he bought a $60,000 Mercedes-Benz for Menendez and his wife in hopes the senator would interfere in 2 pending criminal investigations against Uribe's associates. Today, another blow to the defense after a judge rejected the senior senator's claims that search warrants used to bring the corruption charges against him were unconstitutional. So how will this all play into Menendez's trial? I'm joined by Chris Grimicioni. He's former Monmouth County prosecutor and the former assistant U.S. attorney for New Jersey. Chris, thanks so much for coming back on the show. Always good to talk to you. Could Jose Uribe's cooperation with prosecutors be the kind of break they need to convict someone like Senator Menendez, who is and was pretty powerful?
It's quite possible. And here's the thing. In federal cases in particular, the government oftentimes relies on cooperation as to supplement the case in chief that they're going to present to the jury. And the reason why it's so valuable is because when you have a co-conspirator like a Jose Uribe, he's going to serve as like a color commentator who's going to explain the context of some of the communications, the emails, the text messages. But most importantly, he's going to confirm what the government alleges, that there was a specific quid pro quo that they engaged Senator Menendez in return for him using official action to benefit them. So, yeah, and then I think you might see even perhaps like a game of musical chairs where once one cooperator falls, there's pressure for the others to consider the same.
Well, and that's where I was going to go next. We saw that in former President Donald Trump's recent trial where, one co-defendant turned and the chips started falling, the dominoes started falling. How likely a scenario is that, given the fact that one of the co-defendants is the senator's wife, the others are businessmen who he's had pretty close ties with?
Well, I mean, the conventional wisdom is that it would be rare for a spouse to cooperate against another one. I guess it's always possible. It's the other co-conspirators that, you know, their attorneys are counseling them, listen, this is the situation, this is your exposure. And, you know, they have an ethical and professional obligation to advise them, not based on what's good or bad for Senator Menendez, but what's good for their individual clients. So they're assessing the quantum of the evidence and the risks of going to trial and losing versus the benefits of potentially accepting a cooperation deal if one's being even offered by the government. I mean, we obviously don't know that to be the case. But I do know that just as a former prosecutor at the DOJ, the more people you can bring in from the inside of that conspiracy to kind of talk with personal experience about it to the jury, the more effective it is.
We're still, though, Chris, 2 months away from this trial beginning. How common or uncommon is it for a co-conspirator like Uribe to change his plea to guilty at this point in the game?
I don't think it's all that uncommon. I mean, most of the time in cases that are sensitive like this, sometimes the law enforcement will make a run at a co-conspirator beforehand. But because of, you know, this is such a complex case that involves a powerful senator, I think what the DOJ likely did is decide to take the, you know, make the arrests, charge the, you know, charge what they did, and then try to sort that out in the wash after. And this is one of the first pins that you see falling as a result of that. I wouldn't be surprised if there is an overture by the DOJ or vice versa, but we'll never know until we just monitor the ECF filing docket, and that's kind of how we find out about this today.
So let me ask you about this decision on the search warrants. These, of course, are the search warrants that uncovered about $100,000 in cash, we'll remind folks, the gold bars, and some of the other lucrative items that Menendez had in his home. How significant is that decision by the judge, which came down fairly quickly from the time that the defense attorneys placed this appeal?
I didn't personally find it surprising. The speed of the decision kind of told me something that the court effectively gave it the back of the hand, the arguments that were being made. You know, the court made some certain findings in its opinion. They said when it came to the argument about asking for a Franks hearing, and they were essentially challenging the government by saying they intentionally withheld important information and were reckless and not sharing with the magistrate, the court said, nuh-uh, not going to happen. They said that it's a far more logical interpretation of the conversations that were cited to in the warrant affidavits as extrapolated by the government. If you read the warrants, it's pretty clear what they're looking for. And obviously the most important thing is they recovered items of evidentiary values. So the DOJ was effectively proven right.
Chris Garmicioni, always good to have your insight. Thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, likewise. Have a great day.
The race to replace Menendez is getting tighter after Representative Andy Kim this weekend picked up his fifth straight county party endorsement in the U.S. Senate primary, winning the Sussex and Warren County Democratic conventions, while First Lady Tammy Murphy landed her second win with the Union County Democratic Organization line. That vote came from the party's screening committee, not a regular convention. And tonight, that's the real test as the two candidates battle for Bergen County's Democratic line in a secret ballot convention. That's a key area because Bergen is home to the state's second largest number of registered Democrats. It's also New Jersey's most populated county. We'll have a full roundup of the event on our broadcast tomorrow. Meanwhile, GOP U.S. Senate contender Curtis Bashaw landed a win this weekend with Cumberland County's Republican convention. And progressive activist Sue Altman, well, she got the blessing of Sussex County Dems this weekend in her bid to take on Congressman Tom Kaine in New Jersey's 7th congressional district. Well, the fight over the future of New Jersey's most visited state park was once again being waged this weekend during a public hearing held by the Department of Environmental Protection to talk about design ideas for the roughly 1,200-acre property along the Hudson River. Members of a controversial design task force have been criticized for their ties to a wealthy developer in the area who wants to commercialize and monetize the open space. But there were few new options presented during the Saturday meeting, and a senior correspondent David Cruz reports tensions were high after the DEP called out the task force for purposely misleading the public.
Liberty State Park is an amazing place with breathtaking views and wide open spaces. But on some days when the tide is low and the river's exposed sediment bakes in the sun for a bit, it can smell a little rank. But it's the Hudson, so what are you going to do? Still, there is another smell around the park nowadays, the stink that a lot of residents are getting from efforts funded by billionaire golf course owner Paul Fireman to turn the park into a commercial sports and entertainment venue. A lot of them were holding their noses at the DEP session this weekend.
We don't have what we need for our people on this side of town. And I think, Commissioner, what you're doing is a great and things. You can still have your open space. Give them their space, but give us ours. I don't care what you put here, but put something that these babies are able to ride their bikes or anything to do. It's nothing here.
Thank you for diligently working on this project to make sure that Liberty State Park, hence the term State Park, remains a public park for the people.
The meeting was a presentation and public session of the Liberty State Park Task Force, getting input and updating folks on progress and plans for the park's restoration. Recently stocked with associates of firemen who've received hundreds of thousands of dollars from the golf course owner, the task force was an opportunity for them to show their faces as part of an official body. Here's County Commissioner Jerry Walker and former basketball coach Bob Hurley, whose foundations are funded by firemen, sounding more like youth advocates than guys pushing for stadiums in the park.
The reality is, you know, in Jersey City, there's certain areas you could go that's safe space. Yeah. And Liberty State Park is one of them. So the kids on the south side of Jersey City deserve an opportunity like that.
And I'm really interested in us all getting together without the public to be able to just talk about what we've read and, you know, get a better consensus.
And as if to demonstrate their lack of interest in public input, none of the firemen-associated task force members hung around for the actual public portion of the meeting, leaving in their wake a series of flyers pushing the false narrative that the DEP plan would intentionally flood the park and the surrounding community.
I regret that there is misinformation on this point within the public dialogue. This project will not cause flooding in Liberty State Park or in the surrounding community. This project is a solution to flooding.
They were saying, we want fields, and DEP's giving fields. You know, I didn't hear anyone say, I want a stadium there. I want an arena that's going to, you know, allow thousands of people to come in and drive in.
Bob Hurley's great coach, but he's not a hydro engineer. He's not an ornithologist. The question is, where is that information coming from that he's sharing? And hopefully he stops sharing that or either comes up to speed. But those are the questions. Where is this information coming from and why is it being spread when we all know it's misinformation?
That's a good question, albeit rhetorical at this point. If money is speech, advocates for large-scale commercial development of Liberty State Park have a megaphone. The question will ultimately be, who's the state gonna listen to? I'm David Cruz, NJ Spotlight News.
In our Spotlight on Business report, New Jersey's public schools aren't the only ones bracing for potential state aid cuts. Governor Murphy's recently proposed budget would cut $20 million to community colleges, a direct reversal from last year's $20 million boost the colleges received. As senior correspondent Joanna Gagas reports, it comes at a time community college presidents say more people are seeking out their institutions for affordability and badly needed resources.
They're going to have to look at whether they need to raise tuition, which they clearly don't want to do. Do they need to remove programs, reduce student services, lay off staff? These are all decisions that none of our colleges want to confront.
But they're decisions each of New Jersey's 18 community colleges are facing because Governor Murphy's proposed budget for the next fiscal year cuts state funding to those schools by $20 million.
That's a 12% cut in 1 year. That's a significant reduction.
Aaron Fichtner with the Council of County Colleges says New Jersey's county schools are already among the lowest funded in the nation. They serve 230,000 students per year, and with the reduction in state aid, college presidents say the costs will likely pass on to them.
If we do not want to cut the services, then we'll be forced to call the students to pay more, and that is what we're trying to avoid.
If the cuts go through as proposed, do you anticipate raising tuition?
Oh, I think we would have to. I mean, you know, we've got to provide some level of service to our students. And unfortunately, and especially, we're also at a time of, you know, some moderate inflation right now. So, you know, our electric costs are going to go up. Those types of things, we're going to have additional costs. So I'd love to not pass it on to the students, but the reality is we will have to pass some of it.
A group of Republican lawmakers who represent Sussex, Morris, and Warren counties have called the cuts astounding and are asking the governor and legislature to restore the funding before the budget is finalized, saying in a statement, New Jersey simply cannot afford to continually underfund community colleges. They play a vital role in our state's workforce development efforts and provide affordable access to a diverse body of students. Students who are likely to be from low socioeconomic areas and first-generation college students, says Essex County College President Augustine Boache.
Most students cannot afford to come to the college, and what hurts is that we will continue to see the equity gap that we've been trying to close over the last few years.
And there could be teacher layoffs and salary freezes. Plus, Boache will have to cut back on expanding mental health programs that his students desperately need, along with other supports like food pantries for hungry students.
I myself use those services. So if those services, if we get budget cuts, those services are not available for us, then where would I be able to go?
Look at the community that you're cutting the budget from. Newark is a pretty low-income community, and cutting that budget doesn't set a good standard.
Passaic County Community College President Stephen Rose says he'll likely have to reduce programs that help students who've suffered learning loss from COVID avoid repeating classes that they've failed.
I don't want them to take it again. We do a thing for 3 weeks after a course where we give them a second chance, and we hire some tutors and we try to get them through. We don't charge them. These are the types of things that are going to suffer because of this.
A lot of people are depending on the resources here to get through school. So I think it would be a bad impact on students if we lost our funding.
These presidents point out this budget is still just a proposal, and they do plan to sit down with their legislators and try to claw back any amount of this funding that they can. In Newark, I'm Joanna Gagas, NJ Spotlight News.
On Wall Street, it looks like investors are taking a breather from last week's record-setting rally. Here's where the markets closed today. Fresh off Newark Mayor Raz Baraka's gubernatorial campaign announcement, his administration is launching a new program aimed at women, a 12-week financial literacy course aimed at giving women the tools they need to pay off debt, grow their savings, or invest in an area where wage gaps and economic disparities are among the highest in the state. Raven Santana has the story.
Really happy to be launching this program during Black History Month, on the last day of Black History Month and on Women's History Month, because the movement is about women in Newark.
First Lady of Newark Linda Baraka wants to make sure women in the city are empowered financially. That's why she says she launched the Newark Women Moving Forward Financial Initiatives, which will give 1,000 female residents the tools to achieve financial freedom. The program partners with a number of organizations, including DFREE, a nationally recognized program that focuses on overcoming the culture of debt, especially among communities of color.
The DFREE movement is designed to take people from the bad D's to the good D's. Living with only the good D's means that you have true financial freedom. Moving from debt, delinquencies, and deficits to deposits, dividends, and deeds is the goal that we want to have full control over your finances. There is space for everyone in this movement. After having more than 100,000 people go through this program, we are excited to partner with First Lady Linda Baraka here in the city of Newark to change even more lives.
Because as a woman, it's important to be on top of your finances, no matter where you are in the spectrum, whether you're in debt or whether you're doing positive. And so it's important to be on top of your finances to make sure that you're financially empowered and that your legacy that you're leaving behind is prepared.
Baraka, who is spearheading the new initiative, was joined by her husband, Roz Baraka, who recently announced he is running for governor. He made it clear the focus was on his wife's achievements, not his.
I want to say you're not here today because of me. You're here today because of Linda Baraka, my wife. She helped make this day a reality. To focus on the empowerment of women is the right thing to do. Since COVID, inflation has hit our communities very hard. It's hit the country hard, it's hit the state hard, it's particularly hit Black and brown communities very, very hard. The women in our community have been hit the worst.
The goal of the free 12-week program that also provides access to live events and licensed professionals is to ultimately create pathways for the Black community to reach financial freedom.
I think that the program is for everybody, right? So I don't want you to feel like, oh, I have to be in debt to participate, or I can't participate because I am in debt.
Being empowered runs deep for a municipal council member at large, Louise Scott Roundtree, whose mother owned the Kruger Scott Mansion. Louise Scott, believed to be Newark's first African-American millionaire, operated a beauty school and lived in the mansion from 1966 until 1982. Now it is where the 12-week program will be held.
I'm excited about this, and it's important because I am the offspring of a woman who came here and did more with less. If our young women could be empowered with information and knowledge as to how they can do things with less, save.
Baraka says while the goal is to enroll at least 1,000 women, she says ultimately she wants to empower every woman in Newark to financially secure their future through the program. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Raven Santana.
That's going to do it for us tonight, but don't forget to download the NJ Spotlight News podcast so you can listen anytime. I'm Brianna Finozzi. For the entire NJ Spotlight News team, thanks for being with us. Have a great evening. We'll see you back here tomorrow night.
NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years. And by the PSCG Foundation.